Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly legislative podcast. I'm John Pimble.
When people are yelling that it's their body, we have to remember there's two bodies. We have the woman's body.
Republican Representative Shannon Lundgren speaks at a rally in the Capitol.
And we have the unborn baby's body. And somebody has got to stand up and fight for that unborn baby who does not have a voice. And it is us.
Representative Lundgren is one of several speakers at an anti-abortion rally in the rotunda of the Capitol. She is one of several speakers introduced by Iowans for Life Executive Director Maggie DeWitt.
We have made some monumental strides here in Iowa within the pro-life movement with passage of the 20-week abortion ban, partial defunding of Planned Parenthood, and the heartbeat bill.
DeWitt is talking about legislation that became law during the last General Assembly. One of those laws from 2017 stated a woman had to wait 72 hours after an initial appointment before getting an abortion. It was overturned by the Iowa Supreme Court last summer. In a 5-2 decision, the court ruled access to abortion is a fundamental right under the Iowa Constitution. Speaking at this rally, Republican Representative Sandy Salmon holds a copy of the state constitution.
I have looked in it, and I've read it. And do you know that you will not find a right to abortion in the Iowa Constitution?
Another bill became law in May that states an abortion is illegal after the fetus's heartbeat can be detected, which is often around 6 weeks. It was the most restrictive abortion bill in the country and was immediately challenged in court.
We knew that it would be an uphill fight in the courts, that it might take us all the way to the United States Supreme Court.
In January, a district court judge ruled against it. This month, Governor Reynolds decided not to challenge this decision.
Everything changed last June when the Iowa Supreme Court struck down the 72-hour waiting period.
Reynolds says it was a hard decision to not challenge the fetal heartbeat law further, but the Iowa Supreme Court's June decision makes it difficult.
And it laid out the groundwork to put every abortion restriction in danger of being overturned now and in the future. I believe and know that they got that decision wrong. And I'm here to tell you, because of you and because we won that election, we are changing that. Because we are appointing judges to the bench that will apply the law and adhere to the Constitution of Iowa and the Constitution of the United States, not inject their own philosophy.
A bill is gaining momentum that would change how Supreme Court justices make their way to the bench. Potential justices are chosen by a judicial nominating commission with 16 members who forward their recommendation to the governor. Right now, half of the judicial nominating commission is appointed by the governor and the other elected by a group of lawyers across the state. The bill proposes that those chosen by lawyers instead be chosen by legislative leaders.
So right now, while I saw no path forward to successfully appeal the district court's decision or to get the lawsuit before the United States Supreme Court, we are not going to give them one more reason and one more bad case law. But that doesn't mean that we're giving up on protecting the rights of the unborn. Far from it. So, while we're gathered here today, now is the time to renew our focus on changing hearts and minds and to seek other ways to protect the unborn in Iowa and around the country.
As the governor speaks on the Capitol's rotunda, a woman on an upper floor protests by yelling.
I believe you have to address things in the moment where you are. And I happen to be here today, so that's why I'm telling them to keep their hands off of my vagina.
Sheila Kanopola Odole says she is an activist who supports legal abortion, but she didn't come to the Capitol for this issue. Like many others near her, she's wearing a factory farm moratorium now red button to talk to lawmakers about environmental and agriculture issues. Kanopola Odole says as she heard Governor Reynolds speak about abortion, she got mad.
I don't know of any woman who would have an abortion willy-nilly. Having an abortion is a difficult decision to make, and I believe that's why God entrusted it to women.
She says she doesn't believe the anti-abortion efforts from Republicans is helping save babies.
If they wanted to save babies, they would pay attention to the children that are already here and stop cutting funding for public education and food and clean water and, you know, all of those important things that we need. So this is bullshit.
There are a few new pieces of legislation aimed at abortion restriction working their way through the process. One of these bills comes before a Senate Judiciary Subcommittee.
It's interesting to me that the issue continues to be one as though it's debatable as to when life begins.
The chair of this three-member subcommittee, Republican Senator Jake Chapman, supports a bill that states life begins at conception. So does fellow Republican subcommittee panelist Senator Annette Sweeney.
I feel that the basis of this bill is about life.
Senate File 259 defines someone as a person from the moment of conception until natural death, and it becomes a crime for even a zygote to be deliberately harmed. This kind of proposal is known as a personhood bill. Laura Hesburgh from Iowa Coalition Against Domestic Violence testifies to the subcommittee that she opposes the bill. Hesburgh says she has concerns about the impact a bill like this could have on the legal system.
We believe this bill could exposes women to criminal investigation for any pregnancy that doesn't result in a live birth, and that has grave impacts for victims of domestic violence.
Subcommittee panelist Democratic Senator Janet Peterson says she is concerned about the bill's lack of exceptions.
For rape, for incest, for child sexual abuse, for cancer treatment, for mental health treatment, for kids, who become pregnant to no fault of their own.
Peterson also questions if this would make some forms of birth control illegal.
Including IUDs, which many young girls use for regulating of their period. Also birth control pills, which prevent fertilized eggs from attaching to the uterus under this legislation. And it appears that those would no longer be legal forms of family planning in our state.
During this 30-minute subcommittee, Senator Chapman reiterates his objection to abortion.
I am enthusiastically going to support this bill. Some will question constitutionality, and, you know, we've had Supreme Court rulings. Well, let me be very clear to everyone in this room, we are not going to stop. We will continue to fight for life. I will continue to fight at every opportunity given to me to protect the life of the unborn.
The two Republicans signed the subcommittee report, and it can advance to the full Judiciary Committee. In other subcommittees, a bill moves forward that would not allow Title X funding to be accepted by organizations that also provide abortion services. So does one about a non-consensual termination of a pregnancy. Additionally, a constitutional amendment stating Iowans do not have a right to an abortion, nor should the state require funding for abortions, has passed. This is the weekly legislative podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimble. Before the session began, Governor Reynolds announced she wants women to have easier access to self-administered hormonal contraception.
This is an opportunity for us to do a common sense thing that I think needs to be done. So I'm hopeful that we can have bipartisan support and we can move this through.
Republican Senator Marinette Miller Meeks has put her name on the governor's proposal for a bill being discussed in a Senate Human Resources subcommittee. Senator Miller Meeks says this isn't for over-the-counter birth control.
We like to refer to this more as a behind-the-counter, sort of like pseudoephedrine that you have to get behind the counter, but you see a pharmacist.
Today, a prescription for such birth control first requires a doctor or a nurse visit. This proposed process would initially only require a person to fill out a self-screening questionnaire. It will require a pharmacist to spend more time with a person applying for birth control. Casey Fisak from the Iowa Pharmacy Association says they are undecided on this bill, but they support the concept.
We believe this is a step in the right direction in recognizing that pharmacists can play a role in increasing access to patient services like this one. We see it as a way to help increase access. However, we would support inclusion of some sort of language that provides recognition for the service that pharmacists are providing and allows for some sort of payment mechanism. Pharmacists are going to be taking time, and that's what we want them to do. We want them to spend time with the patient, provide the best outcome, and determine the right course of action. But to do so, they're going to have to take time out of their schedule. And the feedback we received is that's going to be difficult without some sort of incentive for them to do so.
A lobbyist for Concerned Women for America of Iowa speaks in opposition. Catherine Keir says she doesn't understand the need for this in Iowa.
I think there's a lot of unintended consequences that will come with this legislation. The detrimental health impacts that birth control can have on young women, especially when there's no physician involved in monitoring the medical history of the patient and the accountability of watching the patient while they are on these contraceptives is important, and I think we'll have some detrimental health impacts to young women that were maybe unintended. We are also concerned about the lack of accountability that this bill provides, since there is no liability for the pharmacist, and we think there needs to be some accountability on those fronts. Lastly, again, I think this is unintended, but I have worked closely the last several years with the fight against sex trafficking, and I believe that this bill opens a door for sex traffickers to access birth control easier and to keep their victims from seeing doctors. And so you can send a woman in to get birth control and nobody would ever know that she was a victim.
Lisa Davis-Cook with the Iowa Association for Justice, a group of trial lawyers, says they don't have a strong opinion on the subject of dispensing birth control, but they do worry about the liability protection in the bill.
Whenever you put in these sorts of protections, you know, our concern is that if you take away the accountability of our justice system, then that takes away the incentive for the providers to act responsible. So what we would ask is if there is an intent to include this liability and this immunity in the bill, we would ask that some language be included. Kind of the phrase that we always like to see is that the provider should act reasonably and in good faith in order for them to have this protection. So if that's something that that you would like, we could sure work with you on some language on that. But that's our main concern, is that if it's blanket immunity like that, that there can be some unintended consequences, things can go wrong.
Paula Dierenfield, representing the Federation of Iowa Insurers, says they are worried about the initial dose of a 12-month supply.
We did circulate the bill to our health carriers and ask for some feedback. And the feedback that we received from several of them was concern around waste. When in every instance, at the initial dispensing of the contraceptive, it's for a 12-month period. One figure that one of our carriers provided is that there's a 15% rate of switch or discontinuation after that initial dispensing of a contraceptive. If we would borrow from a bill that has been filed in the House, what they've done over there is they've proposed a more tiered approach. 3 months the first time, and then 12 months every time after that.
The subcommittee chair, Senator Marionette Miller-Meeks, says for a woman to receive birth control, they must fill out a detailed hormonal contraceptive self-screening questionnaire. It also requires a photo ID with a verified date of birth.
It asks for a blood pressure to be taken. It asks if they're pregnant, when their last menstrual period was, if they've ever used contraceptives before, if they've ever had a bad reaction to a hormonal contraceptive, what kind of reaction there was, if they're currently using any method of birth control, have they been told by a medical professional not to take hormones.
The self-screening questionnaire also asks about other health matters like migraine headaches, blood clots, cancer, and are other medications being taken. The pharmacist will have the choice of whether or not to dispense the birth control.
The refill is only for 2 years and at 24 months. If they still have not, if they've answered no to having seen a provider, does not dispense refill medication.
Senator Miller Meeks is a medical doctor and says this bill is about accessibility.
Make it easier for women to obtain and have access to contraceptive treatment. It is not, and as a physician, I can assure you I wouldn't be presenting this today to you in a subcommittee if I thought that we were putting women at a health risk.
Also on this panel is Republican Senator Tom Green, a retired pharmacist.
I think this is just a logical step. It's a good step for Iowa women and a very positive step, and I will be urging appropriate reimbursement for the time for that pharmacist. It should be a net savings to the state and to insurance carriers. So I would urge the body to adopt this.
Democratic Senator Pam Yoakum says she supports the bill, but one aspect she would like changed is the dispensing of 12 months of contraception after the first visit.
The choice of birth control is individual for each woman, and some have higher risk. And I think there's also other drug interactions that need to be taken into account. So it might make sense to have a more tiered approach, as was mentioned in perhaps the bill that the House is currently considering, on a 3 month, to provide the 3 months, and if everything goes well, then go ahead with the 12 month. But I could see where that would make some sense.
Senator Miller Meeks agrees to amend the bill to include a tiered approach, that providers act reasonably and in good faith, and to have an enhanced dispensing fee for the extra time it will require pharmacists to work with patients. The three-member panel signed the bill, and it is eligible to come before a full committee. You are listening to Iowa Public Radio's weekly legislative podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimble. We're looking at three stories about how some things could become less or more accessible, and we've included where Governor Kim Reynolds is coming from on these issues. When Reynolds gave her condition of the state in January, she stated she wants to see voting rights restored for felons.
Our Constitution takes away the voting rights of anyone convicted of a felony forever. Only two other state constitutions have a similar provision. And last November, the people of Florida voted to remove their ban. Through the power of clemency, the governor can restore those rights. And I've done that 88 times since taking office. But I don't believe that voting rights should be forever stripped, and I don't believe restoration should be in the hands of a single person.
Now, her proposal is in a Senate Judiciary Subcommittee as a constitutional amendment. This is the first part of a long journey. It must pass both chambers during this General Assembly as well as the next. Then it has to be approved by voters. This subcommittee is chaired by Republican Senator Dan Dawson, who is also in law enforcement.
Quick description, this is a constitutional amendment proposing restoration of the right to vote for any convicted felon who has discharged his or her sentence.
Karen Person from the League of Women Voters of Iowa supports the resolution.
Iowa is now left as only one of two states in the nation that permanently bans all individuals with a felony conviction from voting unless the governor restores the right to vote, either through an individual application for rights or through an executive order. An executive order can be reversed, and it can lead to a lot of confusion.
Rick Admiral, pastor from the Newton Prison Church New Life Prison Community, says there are so many who are incarcerated that want to change their life when they get out of prison.
And part of changing your life is reintegration into the society after a person is released. And I strongly believe that we don't need to punish people excessively, that we need to give them a second chance.
Rick Sadler is an Iowan who can no longer vote. In 2006, Sadler was convicted of vehicular homicide.
From that, I received a 10-year suspended sentence, 5 years probation, $150,000 restitution.
The resolution does not require restitution to be complete, and Sadler wants to make sure the resolution is not amended to include that. Sadler says he is paying restitution at a rate he is able to afford.
I've had the good fortune in the last 5 years to work with an employer that recognized something beyond what the F stands for on the application. And as far as that goes, not to expand upon that, but as far as that goes, there are so many times, I mean, I'm not diminishing what I did. I feel terrible about what I did. I live with that every day. I'm not taking anything away from that. That's not what this is about. But as far as what that means, so many employers don't look at you, won't even grant you an interview, and once they do look at you, it's just like, well, next candidate, thank you. And that gets back to the portion of being able to pay off the restitution. You know, it's hard without a decent job to do that. I don't know. That's a lot of money to me.
Sheila Corsby is a lobbyist for the Iowa Conference of the United Methodist Church. While advocating for this resolution, she also reveals she is a convicted felon.
I got off parole in 2009. Because I was granted my rights back, I've become a productive member of society.
Corsby's voting rights have been restored.
Because of getting my rights back and becoming a productive member of society, now I'm able to give back to people. And I think if I wasn't given parole or given my rights back, who knows where I would be, because I would feel like I'm like this bad person forever.
Corsby also wants to make sure a requirement to complete restitution payments isn't added to this resolution.
I'm still paying on my restitution. And I've heard people talk about, well, we don't want to pass this bill. A lot of people want the restitution paid off before you can get your rights back. Well, I may be paying on this until the day I die.
Legislative liaison for Governor Reynolds, Kayla Lyon, says the governor wants this as a constitutional amendment because she doesn't believe restoration rights should permanently come from a single lawmaker. But until the resolution passes, the governor will consider restoring individual rights.
She has since restored the rights for 122 individuals since taking office because she believes the right to vote is a key piece of reintroduction into society after discharge of a sentence.
Also supporting the resolution is Drew Klein from Americans for Prosperity.
When we look at some of the underlying issues with public safety, we should really be thinking very quickly about recidivism. And when we treat people like second-class citizens when they're done with their sentence, we contribute to a cycle of recidivism. Instead, what we really ought to be doing is making sure that we are upholding not only the value of second chances, but the accountability that comes with that. That accountability includes going out and being a productive member of society, a productive member of your community, getting a job, supporting yourself and those around you. There are a lot of barriers, unfortunately, today that make it difficult for an individual to do that. And I believe that the right to vote is part of those barriers.
Greg Baker from the Family Leader Foundation says this may be his favorite piece of legislation he's ever worked on.
The coalition that has brought together, I mean, it's not every day you see a coalition like this at the Capitol, but also just the incredible opportunity to talk about redemption and people that have radically changed their lives. We all know people who have.
This room is filled with people from organizations who often strongly disagree on other issues, but not this one. Democratic Senator Janet Peterson is one of the three members of this subcommittee. Because this resolution will take a few years to pass through two general assemblies, Peterson also encourages Governor Reynolds to issue an executive order.
She could pass an executive order between now and then, and we could get started on restoring rights. But today I'm happy to sign, and I thank the governor for her asking us to take action, and I'd ask her to do the same using the power of her office.
Republican Senator Tom Shipley says he is also signing on.
I know people who have served time. I also know people who have been victims. And I don't take their concerns lightly either. But I do know people that have served time, and if they didn't tell you or you didn't know it, you wouldn't know it.
And the chair of the subcommittee, Dan Dawson, is also signing this resolution, but he says there is still a lot of work ahead.
What we're trying to do here today is start a constitutional process that gives the people of Iowa an opportunity to weigh in on this, as well as the legislature has a responsibility to define what an automatic restoration means. Specifically, the legislature has a responsibility to define what discharge of his or her sentence means. That can mean a variety of things, and we're talking about the automatic restoration once the discharge of the his or her sentence has been completed. Nothing in this amendment being debated or any other legislation would preclude the governor's office from still granting executive clemencies for extraordinary circumstances, which would warrant such, whether it be voting rights, firearm restoration rights, so on and so forth. This, what we're debating here in this legislature, is what is the automatic process and what conditions does that fall under? Like Senator Shipley mentioned, I myself, within a few days of this bill being published, heard calls from victims as well, too. And while their voices are not present here today in this subcommittee, their voices will be heard by colleagues on both sides of the aisle. And we will find, hopefully, some type of way to define what discharge of his or her sentence means to allow for an automatic process, yet still allow for the governor's office to have their clemency process to maybe hone down more on those extraordinary cases which might warrant an additional restoration of voting rights, or going beyond that step of the restoration of voting rights for those extraordinary situations that might not fit the discharge of his or her sentence. For that, I will be recommending passage out of here, and we will continue this debate forward. Thank you.
While this resolution has support here, it's clear that should it come before the full committee, there will be more discussion and possibly amended language. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislature. I'm John Pimple. A bill that would bring the death penalty back has passed a Senate subcommittee. It would impose the death penalty on those found guilty of kidnapping, raping, and killing a child. Last year, a capital punishment bill passed a subcommittee, but did not come up for discussion in the full committee. While there is support for the concept in the House, the death penalty supporter in charge of the committee concluded last year it costs taxpayers more to pay for years of legal challenges than it is to keep someone in prison for life. The death penalty was abolished in Iowa in 1965. This is a weekly show that tries to explain just some of what is happening during the legislative session. New episodes come out every Friday from iowapublicradio.org and iTunes. We hope you're able to share the show with some of your friends. You can talk about it on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. Iowa Public Radio has other avenues of covering the State House as well, and a lot of it comes from Katerina Sestarik. She has a story or two almost every day. You can read them from our website, iowapublicradio.org. Her reporting absolutely helps this show out every week. We also rely on a good press pool at the Capitol from television, newspaper, and other radio outlets like Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson. Michael Leland, Iowa Public Radio News Director, helps this show out with all our stories, and he provides script editing. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.